Hello and welcome to the show. This is Ross Laguza, and for over 30 years, I have consulted on hundreds of high-stakes, complex, bet-the-company kinds of civil cases all over the country. Along the way, I've worked with thousands of the best lawyers, trained hundreds of fact and expert witnesses, and yes, participated in numerous jury selections. Today, I'm your 15-minute jury consultant. During the episodes of this podcast, I hope to provide trial lawyers, law students, jury consultants, basically anyone interested in the jury decision process with strategic insights, best practice tips, and plain talk designed to help you take your persuasion game to the next level. How many times have we sat across the table from a partner, a dear friend, or our own child and not have been exactly sure what they were thinking? Have you ever observed someone close to you doing something that seemed unusual or out of the ordinary and wondered why? And of course, not a day goes by without puzzling over the behavior of people we don't know at all. What could make someone do the things they do? Why do they drive like that? How come they don't know how to stand online for coffee? People are complicated. My research has shown that a fair number of people do not feel well understood, even by those closest to them. And yet, given all the complexity and mystery that surrounds human behavior, trial attorneys are asked to make guesses about which jurors are least likely to be fair to their client. In fact, they are expected to be good at it. Enter the jury consultant. An occupation with no formal training, no barriers to entry. Jury consultants are supposed to be good at reading or interpreting human behavior. Some even cultivate the impression that they have an intuitive gift or special process or technique or test that give them unique insight into prospective jurors' minds. Some tout computer formulas and multiple regression equations. Some have file folders jammed with notes and numbers. The question I want to address is, do jury consultants have some type of special power, like a psychic network kind of power, or are they just guessing too? Here's the spoiler. I think an experienced trial consultant can help during jury selection, but there is no magic, sadly. Why do people think there is magic? Well, first of all, the task we're trying to do is quite difficult. Predicting the future behavior of strangers is hard, especially when you are talking about days, weeks, or months into the future. Predicting the behavior of a group of strangers and the unknown social pressures they will place on each other is even more difficult. If anyone could actually do this with a high degree of accuracy, using some sort of special sixth sense or a special test or a set of questions, they wouldn't be doing jury consulting. I guarantee you that. Jury consulting is a tough gig. Traveling all over the country, spending days away from home and family. I mean, it would be a lot easier being an online psychic, probably more lucrative, and also no barriers to entry. But since lawyers know that predicting behavior is quite difficult, they don't mind bringing in someone who professes to have an inside track. You know, it's so tempting because when we're in threatening situations, and I would describe jury selection as a potentially threatening situation, we tend to be more likely to embrace magical thinking as a way to cope with our stress. And if somebody comes along and says, look, I can do this for you. I don't even need to ask any questions. I can just look and listen, and I'll be able to tell you how these people think. And that's going to solve your problems. I mean, that is pretty compelling stuff. It just doesn't work. Over the years, some jury consultants have cultivated this magical persona. They lean into the idea that they possess a certain skill. And some are really good at putting on the show, but in the end, it's just a show. They might offer gadgets or theories or tests that sound great. And sometimes if they're creative and inventive, they can weave amazing backstories on strangers based on just a few observations. It's truly entertaining, but not particularly useful. One of my favorite clients got really excited years ago because he met someone who purported to be an expert at administering the Myers-Briggs personality test. It's a personality test which helps you understand how you relate to the world, how you perceive information, how you judge that information. And the thought is that, you know, there are different types, I think 16 in total, different combinations of characteristics that create different personality types. And knowing someone's personality type or how they score on this inventory can help you understand how they see the world. So this person had convinced my client that this would be useful for jury selection. I just remember him sitting and telling me about it, and he was so excited about it. And I said, and the person was there too. And I said, so how are you going to give jurors the Myers-Briggs? Because it's a lot of questions. And I don't see any judge allowing you to give this test, this personality inventory, to prospective jurors. And she said, the expert said, well, we won't give them the questions. I'll just evaluate them by looking at them and hearing what they have to say. And I said, well, then what's the test for? I could see that my client was so excited with the idea that, armed with her insight, her read on whether someone was extroverted or introverted or perceptive or how they looked at the world, if just by looking at them, then they would know. They would know how to try the case to them. And they would know something instrumental about how they were going to make their decisions. And there was no way I could talk him out of it. He was too excited. Finally, if you use a consultant and you win your case, that's maybe all you need to know. Just the coincidence of that makes you believe in the power that the jury consultant professes to have. So for some lawyers, the jury consultant is like a rabbit's foot. The jury consultant brings good feelings to a difficult task. In fact, one could build a whole career as an affable rabbit's foot, and indeed, some people have done just that. So the task of selecting a jury is quite difficult, and someone who says they can cut through it all and provide a clear path, that's very compelling. Now, for some truth. Number one, demographics alone, rarely even in combination with other factors, ever contribute anything meaningful to explanations of juror behavior. Two, prospective juror behavior in a courtroom is not normal behavior. People are often managing impressions, or they feel nervous or self-conscious, everybody's looking at them, so on and so forth. This public, nervous presentation management behavior clouds things up a bit when we're watching them and trying to evaluate what they're doing. Third, most of the information collected during voir dire and or through the use of jury questionnaires is not useful. So given this reality, how can I still claim that jury consulting can be helpful and that it's something more than just a shared fiction between the attorney and the consultant? First, if the consultant is experienced and good at social science, they can help you discover and craft meaningful jury selection questions. I'm going to talk more about this in an upcoming episode. Second, a trained observer can notice things that are important but escape your attention as you manage the complexities of the voir dire process. A good consultant can keep you on strategy and offer useful follow-up questions. Finally, an experienced consultant can help you navigate those chaotic minutes between the end of voir dire and the point at which you must exercise your strikes. Sometimes having somebody with a cool head who can help you methodically go through the jurors in question and considerations that apply to them is worth the price of admission right there. So there are simple tools that actually work, that jury consultants use or can use, and lawyers can use them as well. And in this series of episodes on jury selection, I'm going to tell you what they are. So one of my favorites is just the power of observation. Anything out of the norm is interesting to me. Now, it's important to explain that this behavior won't necessarily be unusual in a different setting. It's just unusual compared to what everyone else is doing during voir dire or in the context of a questionnaire. Here's a couple of quick examples. I worked on the first mass shooting litigation in this country. You have to go way back before you can remember a time when mass shootings weren't a nearly daily occurrence. In this case, plaintiffs were blaming an antidepressant for causing a former employee to go in and kill a number of people at his place of work. I was consulting with the lawyers for the drug manufacturer. The stakes were high. The uncertainty was high as well because there hadn't been a case like this before. No one knew what was going to happen. There was no textbook approach. There was no manual. Fortunately, we were allowed jury questionnaires, and that information was useful to us. But what stood out was one juror out of about 150 filled her questionnaire out in calligraphy, which is a stylized kind of writing. So I told the attorneys that this person presented a unique risk, but not because of her answers, which were more or less typical. There were some good and some bad things, but they were pretty much in the middle of the curve in terms of danger. But just because I had never seen any juror in any case use calligraphy to fill out a questionnaire. And I'm talking about thousands and thousands and thousands of questionnaires. I've never seen that. Because there were other people that were certainly more dangerous and had to be struck, this person was put on the jury. As it turns out, the defense only had one person that was holding out, and it was the calligraphy juror. Fortunately for my client, she was persuaded eventually, but she was recalcitrant, and it took a lot of work to get her to move over. I can't emphasize enough how important this focus is to your practice during voir dire. Paying attention to outliers, paying attention to behavior that seems inconsistent with what everyone or most everyone else is doing. And here's the important and interesting thing is that these observations of outlier behavior may on the surface look like they have nothing to do with the case. They just are random behaviors or things that people do that don't seem related. And that's what makes them so important, because they indicate to you that the person is unusual, but we often don't pay attention because we're too busy focused on theories and formulas and magical ideas when it's right in front of our face, right under our noses, is behavior that we need to attend to and value. In the episode on jury questionnaires, I'll tell you how to use this technique to evaluate questionnaire answers to show you which people are truly unusual in the particular sample that you have. So that was one example. Here's another quick one. Was working on another large product case. This was in federal court in New York, and the voir dire was judge directed, so there was very little useful questioning. He basically just asked people to stand up, say their name, what their occupation was, a couple of details about their family, and people went through this fairly routinely. And there was one woman who was a single parent. She had a child. She seemed reasonably articulate. She had a good job. She was not a remarkable person in any particular way, and certainly not anything that she said or disclosed while she was being interviewed. But after she sat down and they moved on to the next person, I noticed her looking around. She was looking around at the other jurors trying to catch their eye. She looked behind herself. She looked down her row. She kept trying to make this eye contact with people. And so when we had our chance to talk about jury selection, you know, we would get put in this little room and it's a very tense few minutes while you're trying to decide, based on the very little information you just got, who was more or less dangerous. I told the attorneys that I couldn't tell them why, but there was something unusual about this person. She was behaving in a way that isn't typical, and that I would not keep her on the jury. Well, there were more dangerous people, and we all agreed those people had to go. She ended up being on the jury, and she hung the jury and actually created numerous issues and drama for the other jurors and the court. And to this day, I can't say what or why she was so difficult. You know, we could speculate lots of reasons, but the point was, is she stood out from the beginning. So you may not know the reason behind the behavior, but it doesn't matter. You know that the person is unusual, and unusual people typically distort the risk profile. So if they have any other markers for a particular orientation and you add into the mix unusual behavior, even if you don't understand the motivation for the behavior, to me, that makes a person, it elevates them as a potential strike. In summary, my problems with magical thinking or pseudo-psychological approaches or just impractical theories are, first, they don't work, and second, it can actually distract you from making observations that actually matter. Both of these factors make you less effective in jury selection. Thank you for joining me for this episode. If you know a lawyer or anyone who you think will like this show, please share it with them. You can send me an email with questions or comments that I may address on future episodes to rlaguza@themomentconsulting.com. The email address is in the show notes. Take care.